The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
This is the hottest I've ever seen, these numbers. And they merit attention. They merit what Mr. Bullard said yesterday. And I think that we should continue to expect that Bullard's going to be right. But I also think that when you see this kind of number, you have to wonder how sustainable it is. I mean, this is like everything is red hot. And everything, there's supply chain problems. And everything, there's people who aren't coming to work because of Omicron. So I don't know. Becky, I'd rather bet that this is, and I'm going to say this today in my morning meeting at 10:20 for the club, that this may be some sort of peak. It's just not sustainable. It's too high, even without the Fed.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I saw numbers this morning I thought we should talk about. In fact, I just heard Mary Graham, our news anchor, reporting on the news. I love the way she put it, that gasoline prices are just an eyelash shy of $3.50 a gallon. That's the average price of gas right now, about $3.50 a gallon. Depending what state you're on, it'll be a little bit more, a little bit less. But I think you probably have experienced this. You know you're paying a whole lot more for things than you were last year. And you've probably seen the reports. I mean, used cars are up a ridiculous amount. New cars are up because of the chip shortage. We've got supply chain issues. We've got gasoline and meat and chicken and food. During the NFL playoffs, my brother-in-law came to visit me and he says, let's go watch the game. So we're going to go out and just get some wings and beer, right? So we sit down in this restaurant, kind of a, pub type of place, lots of people around, big screen TVs. Order our beer, we go to order the wings, and chicken wings. They used to throw them away, right? And they were nothing. They were an afterthought. I think a dozen chicken wings, I think a dozen of them were, it was $15 or $16. Maybe it was even higher than that. Might have even been, we ended up paying $20-some for whatever the chicken was that we got. So I don't know how many chicken wings we got, but I'm like, $26 for chicken wings? There may be a dozen, maybe there were a little bit more. Ridiculous, right? That's inflation, and you're seeing it. He didn't want to get them. I'm like, let's just get them. We're going to pay that much for chicken wings? It's like, you got a point. I'd rather get oysters, for that price. You pay less for a shucked oyster or clams on the half shell. Then you do chicken wings. It's crazy. Heating oil, natural gas, propane, right? It's cold right now in some parts of this country. That's running a lot higher than it was the last year. And that's hitting a lot of people hard. And my heart goes out to you as they try to fill up their tanks or they look at their heating bill. I saw a news commentator a couple of days ago. A guy probably makes a big six-figure salary, right? Complaining about his heating bill. He actually called, I think, the heating company because you couldn't believe how high it was. So I don't care what strata you're at. Cost of living has gone up. Food keeps going up. Housing's gone up. Housing's been crazy. Clothing, just about everything else. So what you may not know, though, is just how bad it is. The Labor Department came out with a report today, and in a minute, Chris Temple is going to be joining me. I want to talk to you about this. I want you to be in the know. I don't want you to fear, but I do think it's important for us to look at where we are right now and what might loom in the not-too-distant future. The Labor Department came out with their producer price index, and the PPI is the amount of wholesale, the amount that wholesalers are paying. And I shared this a little bit earlier in the day. I mentioned that, that price had jumped almost 10%. It went up to 9.7% over last year. And that's a percent higher than it was last month. So Wall Street experts, they weren't expecting that. And if you are in the market, it's going to be a volatile ride, right? It's going to be up and down. You're going to Russia, oil, heating, PPI. I mean, they expected only 0.5% over last month. So when it was 1%, that was a little bit of a surprise. On top of that, a key indicator of manufacturing activity, the Fed index of New York regional factory activity, that was, as MarketWatch put it, barely positive last month. So other reports, they're not very optimistic either. Now, none of this is indicating what President Biden said the other day, that it's going to be tapering off. It's a tapering off of inflation. Do you remember, and I don't know whether it was chairman of the Fed or it was Biden or whoever it was. I remember months ago when this was starting to heat up, everybody was saying, inflation's transitory. It's transitory. And I'm thinking, no, it's not. It is not transitory right now. But why are we seeing it? Did we overheat the economy by all the stimulus money? Is it bad policy? What's going on that's causing this increase? You know, not helping in inflation. You know, inflation is not helping our economy grow. I mean, wages, I know they're going up in some areas, but if you look at how much money you're bringing home, subtract the cost of inflation, it hurts. Chris Temple joins me today. He's the publisher of The National Investor. I get it. It comes to my inbox as well. And you can find him at nationalinvestor.com. He's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening in the economy. We've talked about it in the past. And as it continues to develop, we bring him back for more insight and analysis. And if you want to join us, you can dial in 888-914-9149. Feel free to join the conversation. Chris, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Good to be with you again.
Yeah, a lot going on, brother. Oh, a lot going on.
That's for sure.
Unbelievable. I mean, a lot of surprises. Wall Street analysts, let's start there. They didn't see this coming, especially, you know, that month-to-month increase. I love your assessment on why. I mean, what happened there? These guys should have seen this, I would have thought.
Well, they should have seen it, but the problem is you have this insular circle of policy wonks. They're useful idiots in the media, like one that you ran a tape of a few minutes ago that now is worried about inflation, but all last year didn't care either.
Yeah, right.
And look, bottom line, Drew, and for our listeners, the late Milton Friedman put it as simply as you can. Inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. 30% of all of the dollars ever created in the history of the U.S. dollar were created by the Federal Reserve in the last 2 years in the names of saving us from the pandemic. What they have accomplished instead, which now everyone is belatedly claiming to acknowledge, is to cause the highest levels of producer and consumer price increases in 40 years. And for all of the talk coming from the Fed, as we are sitting here today on February the 15th, the Fed's federal funds rate is still 0%, and they are still net buying, meaning net printing new money, treasury and mortgage securities for another 6 weeks, unless they decide to stop that. So, you know, you can pretend that after having been an arsonist for so long, that now you're going to flip and become a firefighter, but the Fed has done nothing yet. Now, I believe that they are going to. There's a lot of political pressure they're under because of these high prices. The Democrat Party is going to get annihilated in the midterms if this doesn't change, right or wrong. And look, Joe Biden has not made things, you know, better. He's made them worse in a few respects, but he's not the Fed chairman. So we'll see what happens. But look, this, you mentioned the word that was Powell's favorite word all last year, transitory. Now everybody, including him, has figured out that price increases are not transitory, and they are not going to go away anytime soon.
So what happened there? I mean, did they really believe that this was transitory? I know the Biden administration, they've sloughed off any blame for this by saying, you know, the so-called stimulus that they made earlier in the year was necessary. It didn't overheat the economy. Is it the government's fault? Should we include the payments that the Trump administration made with that? I mean, what has caught, what was the match that lit this fire, so to speak?
It was at its core, Drew, it was the Federal Reserve. And we need to distinguish for the listeners a distinction between the government with policy moves in the form of stimulus and so forth, which frankly were less bad than the main culprit, which again was Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve simply printing money. Quick history lesson here. You know, back in the 70s, and you and I remember this, and some of our listeners old enough remember this, we had a declining dollar, soaring inflation and interest rates. And a lot of what occurred at that time included some one-off factors. A big one, with a huge increase for a while in the oil price back there, was the Arab oil embargo. And I won't get into the geopolitics at the time. We don't have time for that. But the simple fact was that there was a shortage of oil. Now, the Fed at the time under Arthur Burns, who was until the recent times the most destructive Fed chairman we had for a long time, he was appointed by Richard Nixon when Nixon took us off the gold standard, and we started our modern day real plunge in fiat currency's value. Burns' excuse for being way behind the curve back then was he wanted to lessen the impact on the economy of the oil embargo. Now look, when you had an oil embargo, it didn't matter what policy rate on interest rates or whatever that Arthur Burns enacted, because the oil just wasn't coming, period, under any circumstances. So all he accomplished was to further cheapen the dollar, and when you do that, commodities denominated in dollars rise in price. Now, this numbskull that we've had recently did exactly the same thing, and they blame it, well, on supply chains. Look, if you have supply chain breakdowns, then nothing the Fed does is going to change that. And so the factors that led to those supply chain breakdowns and bottlenecks and so forth, until they change. But no, the Fed claimed that it needed to print all of this money to make things better, and it made things worse. Because just like the oil embargo and the Fed's response in the 70s caused oil to go up more than it would have otherwise, he's done exactly the same thing now, except everything else has gone up in price as well.
So the Fed is going to, I believe they're going to be raising interest rates. They've already said they're going to do that probably, you know, a quarter of a percent. Will that be enough to stop the trend right now? Or,
no.
Or you don't think that's, you're going to need to do more? Or what do you think?
Here's the issue, Drew. The Fed for a long time, since Paul Volcker did a 180 about 3 years into his term back about 1982, the Fed has engineered asset price increases as a primary means of economic growth. So they inflate the daylights out of the money supply. When we had better and different circumstances than we have today, most of that money printing and an increase in debt actually went into asset prices. That led to the so-called wealth effect and helped the economy. They did so much of that in the last 2 years, and sometimes the Fed admits it. Powell admitted that in his press conference back in December when he finally indicated the Fed's going to get serious about reining in these price increases, where he, in kind of a Freudian slip, admitted that his first obligation is not to upset the markets and do anything too abrupt or too fast or whatnot. So that you've got that on the one hand, that they've reblown all these bubbles from the past in real estate, which is unaffordable for millions more people than it was 2 years ago, et cetera, you know, the stock market and everything. But now the Fed is getting pulled a little bit in the other direction. You know, you've got the majority of voters in this country. To them, the stock market is an abstract. Yes, some of them, without half realizing it, sometimes have exposure to the stock market in their pension or 401k plan or something like that. But it's not as real. And now when you look at the average American and the fact that consumer confidence has been dropping for months because of these rising prices, now the Fed, and with undoubtedly pressure from the White House, is realizing, okay, we did overdo it. How far are we willing to go back in the other direction? Are we willing to inflict some pain to cause a 20 or 30 or 40% correction, which is way overdue in the stock market, and hopefully not overdo it in order to have some mechanism to bring this 7, 8, 10% inflation rate, maybe cut it in half or maybe by a third by election day so that the drubbing for the Democrat Party isn't as bad as it's going to be otherwise. So I do believe that until they think they're about to break something in the markets, which is a danger, the Fed is going to be, they're starting out slow, and it's aggravating to see them talk about this and still do nothing about it. But they are going to start raising interest rates. It's not going to shock me if the first one is 50 basis points. But even if it's not, they're probably going to raise interest rates at every meeting this year. There's going to be some risk in that, but you know they caused this problem themselves. They got nobody to blame but themselves.
Right. My guest today is Chris Temple. If you want to join us, Feel free to dial in. The number here is 888-914-9149. I only have them for maybe a few more minutes. So if you've got a question, a comment, you want to join us, good time to call. 888-914-9149. Wally is a listening to us in Wisconsin, wants to join the conversation. Wally, good afternoon.
How you doing, Drew? I think your guest is right. My banker is saying at least 50 basis points instead of a quarter. But the reason I'm calling in is we're complaining about the inflation, you know, 5, 7, 10%, whatever you want to listen to. But one thing that I want to drive home is the farming cost. I break mine up into three different sections, fertilizer, seed, and then chemical, three different areas. Mm-hmm. And the one guy that I spend about $215,000, $20,000 in this one area, and just got the quote a few months ago. And to replace that $215,000 this year, it's going to cost me $399,000.
Wow.
That's inflation.
Wow.
So,
you're kidding. And that cost will get passed on. And so we, the consumer, will have to eat that too. But my heart goes out to you, brother.
Well, we better go and say some prayers to St. Isidore. It's the only way we're going to get out of this one. Because the real estate and everything else is going up like he's saying, you know, you can't afford, you know, land value. But that, I just had to say that, Drew. Thanks.
Well, thank you. I'm going to let Chris respond too. I'm grateful. Always good to hear from you, Wally.
Okay.
So there's a farmer who sees his cost almost doubling. I mean, that's staggering. And look, those are real costs. He has to have the money in order to be able to do that if he wants to stay in business. And then again, if he is, that stuff's got to get passed on.
That's right. You know, on my website, I've got a recording of a talk I gave to the Money Show a while back, and the theme was how to invest in the great stagflation of 2022. I'm sorry. And look, there's this old saying of what happens when an irresistible force meets an immovable object. The Fed has unleashed inflation and a lot of things that kept the monetary inflation of the last 40 years fairly isolated just to asset prices are gone. All around the world, there's rising pressure for labor costs. You know, people are getting increases in wages belatedly for the first time in a lot of years. Right. And so we're going back to this cost push type of inflation of the 1970s, where, as Wally said, his input cost goes up, he's got to pass those on to other people, et cetera. But at some point, when you consider that, unlike the 1970s, today, the entire economy and every average household in this country is way more leveraged, way more in debt, way more out over their skis than everybody was in the late 70s. At what point does this inflation cure itself by an economic stagnation process, if not a bust? Because at some point, and look, just in the recent past, you and I, years back, I mean, I remember when mortgage rates were 15, 16, 18%. And now they just went above 4, and it's put a major dent already in the mortgage originations. We're going to be at 5% plus for a 30-year mortgage by mid-year, and that's really going to throw a monkey wrench into some areas of the housing market. Now, you've still got a lot of liquidity out there, and people, I'm here in Florida, and as everybody has heard, especially if you're on the beaches, prices, you know, money is no object because people want to move here and they've got money burning a hole in their pocket. But I think for the economy generally, Drew, we're going to see before this year is over major areas where we're going to start to see economic slowdowns because consumers are not going to be able to bear these rising costs. But what's going to continue to aggravate it is that in so many areas, energy is at the top of the list, but all kinds of commodities. It's not just a matter that the Fed printed too much money and pushed these prices up. Across the board, and you and I talked before about battery metals and this whole green economy thing that Biden is trying to sell, there is not the energy out there, nor is there nearly enough in the pipeline. Not only where oil and gas are concerned, we're going to be paying Canadian, if not European, prices for gasoline in this country.
You're bringing
in the
me
next
down.
Couple of years.
You're bumming me out, Chris. You're
well,
bumming
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but
well, let's do this. Let's
look,
grab a
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'll final thought, and then we'll grab a couple calls.
Well, it's not just because of the Fed, though. The Fed, first and foremost, is a problem because of all the money printing that they've done. But this is a policy error that contributes to and exacerbates higher prices that you can lay at the feet of the politicians, and specifically at the Biden administration, which has done a lot of harm to our energy independence, to the pipeline of oil and gas in this country, and so forth. So we're going to pay a lot of money for these
things. Tom has been waiting to join the conversation. He's listening to us in Florida, in Sarasota. Tom, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. So my question is, what is the small investor to do? Is he going to ride it out, or does he get out of the market? What do you think?
It's a great question.
Well, look, if you look at the bear market bottom in 1974, from that point until you had a brief but sharp correction when Paul Volcker really got serious raising interest rates, the stock market more than doubled, even as inflation was rising into the double digits. Now, granted, back then it was starting from valuation-wise a much lower level, but I think what's going to happen, and I refer you again to that Money Show seminar that I have on my website, there are going to be a lot of areas of the stock market that will do well. My prediction, short and sweet, the NASDAQ this year is probably, at least at its worst level, may not end the year here, but the NASDAQ will probably be down 30 or 40%. The S&P 500 will probably be down between 15 and 20. Yet there's going to be whole swaths of the stock market that rise if they're commodity related, if they're good, solid companies that pay good dividends. One of the good things about this stagflation that we're going into is it's going to force investors to be investors again. You can't just close your eyes and buy the FANG stocks and the meme stocks and, you know, think that the Fed's got your back and you're bulletproof. That's gone for a little while at least. Yeah. So there's lots of stuff out there. I mean, in the energy area, this was a sector written off for dead a year and a half ago. In the energy area, you've got Cadillacs of companies out there that have reduced their debt. They got through the energy bear market. Some of the top pipeline companies in this country that have got great earnings, they're paying 6 and 7 and 8% dividends. Those are no-brainers going forward. You're going to get 20 to 40% total returns, I think, on stocks like that over the next couple of years. So you want to look at things like that. Look at what has pricing power, you know, and energy will, commodities will for a while. Avoid some of the past safety stocks. I mean, I loved a lot of the retail stocks, rode them up for a while, Walgreens, CVS, Big Lots. We got that real cheap when it was in trouble. It went from 16 bucks to 50 something. I wouldn't own a single retailer now, because they're not going to be able to pass on all the rising costs.
Yeah. Well, hey, Tom, thank you for the call. You are the voice of a lot of small investors out there saying, what do we do if it's going to be a volatile ride? I'm grateful for your call. But because of time, let me move along. Christina has a great insight here and a great question, too. She's listening to us in Silicon Valley. Hi, Christina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I haven't heard anyone address this. How can we escape the wage price spiral? Meaning we have to raise wages in order to attract and retain talent. And as a consequence, companies have to pay more for that. And so they have to raise their prices. So my question is, how can we escape that?
Christina, it's such a great question. I was thinking the same thing as we were having a conversation, Chris. I was going to ask you about that because it is, the way she described it was perfect. It's a spiral. It's this closed loop where, you know, how do you get out of it? Great question.
I have responded in similar times that I've done your show in the past, Drew, and this is an appropriate time to do it. It's not realistic, tragically, but if we had an economy based on social justice and the church's teachings, Amen. Specifically on the teachings on economics and wages and stuff by Pope Leo XIII, we would escape that wage price spiral. Everybody would have a living wage and we wouldn't have the messes in the markets we do. In my opinion, the present system does not afford that opportunity by its design. The fractional reserve system that the Federal Reserve runs is a trickle-down system, where the rich and powerful get more so because everything is based on asset prices and control. And the first priority is not people. The first priority is capital and the value of markets. And frankly, and it's a much deeper discussion we have time for, but this is a spiritual thing as a country where we need to have a monetary system. And I think we need to obliterate the one we have and start from scratch, quite honestly, if we're going to do this right to serve people. Otherwise, we're hostage to working within, I believe, an evil system and doing the best we can with it and within it.
Well, Chris, a great point to leave us off with, and I'm grateful. My apologies to everyone else that's on hold. Chris Temple, editor and publisher of the National Investor, you can tap into his expertise by going to that website, nationalinvestor.com. That's nationalinvestor.com. Chris, thank you. We'll talk again. This is a story that's still being written, so look forward to tapping into your expertise. Thank you, brother.
Take care.
We'll catch up soon. Again, Chris Temple, check him out, nationalinvestor.com, nationalinvestor.com. Hey, when I return, we'll change gears. I don't know whether you heard this story or not, but it seems that, Hillary Clinton was tapping the Trump and the White House. This campaign, I'll fill you in. Don't go away.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Journalist Glenn Greenwald noted on Twitter, the special counsel investigating wrongdoing that led to Russiagate, John Durham, filed a document accusing the Clinton campaign of paying tech operatives to spy on Trump campaign, then admin servers. See if you can find liberal outlets covering this.
Yeah, there's an interesting Watergate parallel here.
Yeah.
Because, we all grew up being told that Watergate was the most serious scandal that had ever rocked American politics.
This is such a bombshell of a filing. You know, of course, we don't know if it's true or not yet, but it seems to suggest that Trump was right when he said that he was being spied upon.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I don't know if you've been following this story or not. Depends on what news outlets you get plugged into. That was The Hill you just heard reporting earlier today that the Durham report that has been filed alleges that Trump was indeed spied upon by the DNC, and some are claiming that if this is true, it could be not just like Watergate, but perhaps bigger than that. And look, just turn the hands of time back. Just go back a couple of years. Do you remember how nasty, how bitter that presidential campaign was? We never saw a candidate like Trump saying the things that he said. And of course, Hillary Clinton and the establishment politicians that have been part of running the country for years, were rooted in their ways. And Hillary and Donald went at each other. Donald Trump, really no political experience, comes up and ousts, this longtime politician, Hillary Clinton. Everybody thought Hillary was going to probably win that election. I'll go back even further. Hillary Clinton and Donald at one time had been friends. They were friends, right? Certainly came to an end. When Trump made it into the White House, he complained he'd been spied on at the Trump Tower in New York in his home. Now, how he knows that, I don't know. Of course, nobody believed him, right? The mainstream media, which had been pushing, his candidacy during the primary season, then turned on him after he won the primaries. Nobody thought he was going to win ever when he first started. And the media turned on him. They laughed at his claims. And when the Clinton campaign and others claimed that he had concluded with Russian agents, here in the U.S., the mainstream media treated it as though it was gospel. Nobody checked the facts, right? Did they validate that? Did they find out if it was actually true? Well, just before he left office, the then Attorney General William Barr, he started a probe into the origins of this whole Russian collusion. And he appointed an attorney, you're going to hear this name a lot, a guy named John Durham. He wanted to appoint him to see where the whole thing originated. And look, it's been a while since that happened. And because of how complicated it is, because Durham apparently knows how to keep a secret, we're just getting news out about it now, and not because of a leak. A court filing. Again, I want to underline that. This is a court filing. A court filing states that the Clinton campaign paid a tech company. They have not identified it. We don't know who the tech company is. I'd love to know who this, quote, big tech company is. They paid a tech company executive to actually hack into Donald Trump's servers at his residence and, of course, at Trump Tower. And what an invasion of privacy, right? Your emails, everything that goes on, they're hacking this stuff. But here's the killer. Here's the stinger. Here's really where every American should say, what? The White House. Do you know how many, you know, intelligence agencies the world over would love to have access into the correspondence that takes place in some of the most important offices in the White House, the Oval Office and others? They apparently were able to hack Trump's servers at his residence, the Trump Tower, and the White House. And according to what Durham told the court, okay, tech executive number one, we don't know who that is, right? And his associates, they exploited this arrangement by mining the executive office of the president for purposes of gathering derogatory information about Donald Trump. They wanted this connection. Hillary Clinton wanted this connection that he was somehow, you know, colluding with Vladimir Putin, with Russia. Now, look, this is a major story. I mean, this would be, some are saying it's treason. But I don't want to get dramatic. I don't want to be over enthused here. I don't want to say, hey, this is absolutely reality. It has not been proven in court yet. Of course, that needs to be done. But no matter what you think of Donald Trump infiltrating the computers at the White House to get derogatory information on the president, that's at least, at a minimum, on par with Watergate. At least. If not a whole lot worse. So let's unpack it. Let's talk about it. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to sound off. I'm delighted to speak today with Dr. Paul Kengor, a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania and a great contributor to this radio program over the years. And doctor, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. Here, let me hold my phone to my ear. I'm at MSNBC.com. The control F, D-U-R-H-A-M, Durham, yeah. Enter. Oh, zero for zero, no hits.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
CNN, let's see. Control F, Durham. Oh, nothing. Look at that.
Crazy.
Zero out of zero. Well, you're right. This could be as significant as Watergate, but... Well, not to the new, not to CNN and MSNBC. So,
Doctor, pick up. Let's talk about that point, though, because I think it's a brilliant one. Honestly, yeah. If you made a mistake, you didn't verify your facts. You supported the myth that there was this collusion and connection. It is a great time to save face and correct. But nobody's even reporting on a story like we saw this with Hunter Biden during the elections. We see it in a lot of other issues. They're silent on things that will hurt their either candidate or their political ideology. And I think that's tragic. And then they wonder why their ratings are so low. I mean, Joe Rogan has about 11.3 million people that listen to him. I heard that CNN on any given hour is something like 500,000. I mean, you're talking about legacy media here. And people are abandoning them, and they wonder why their ratings are so low. What's your mindset behind this? Why do you think they fail to report on this? Because I think the Post and Washington Post and others are saying, this has been debunked. This is a myth. This isn't true. This has already been, you know, pointed out as not a reality. Is there any merit to that? Has this been debunked, or do you think that this is going to be the big story of 2022?
Well, it should be the big story of 2022. In fact, so here in front of me at CNN.com, breaking news, House January 6th committee. So get that. The other one, jury finds that Sarah Palin failed to prove her defamation case against New York Times. Let me type in Trump. Three hits. Analysis. Trump's financial and legal problems just got a lot worse. Let's see. Impeachment for Trump. Oh, there you go. That's, I haven't seen that for a while. Another one. Opinion. Trump's accounting issue comes at an awkward time. Trump's accounting issue? What's that? I have no idea what's going on with that. But I do know what you and I are talking about. Is that John Durham was appointed special counsel by Bill Barr, who was Donald Trump's DOJ attorney general. And you know, that was back in 2020, I think October, November 2020. And here we are about a year or so after that. And now he's filed a motion in the D.C. court with this shocking information about spying on Trump at Trump Tower, both with Donald Trump as a candidate and also as president. And this implicates Hillary Clinton as well. So this is an absolutely gigantic story. And the fact that they're ignoring it, I'm not surprised. And liberals apparently enjoy this kind of self-imposed ignorance on themselves. And you know, if you're a conservative, if you're like a Fox News watcher, and you go up to your liberal friend and say, "Hey, what do you think about the Durham report?" They could just tell you that you're a nut, you're a conspiracy theorist, because they've never heard of it. And if right. CNN doesn't cover it, then it doesn't exist. And you know, that's where we are. It's such a toxic situation in America. Our media is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. There are a lot of reports about Donald Trump flushing things down the, you know, toilets of the White House, but zero coverage on something that should be of major national and international concern to every American. This is our country. This is the White House. If it happens to Trump, it could happen to somebody else. Let's go to the phones. We'll take a couple calls. We want to get in the guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor. The number to join the conversation, 888-914-9149. We'll go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Charlie, good afternoon.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
I remember when I was a kid, a neighbor lent me a book called "When Treason Doth Prosper, None Dare Call It Treason." And I think that's what's going on in this country today. The treason is—it's just like so prosperous for these people, and all they're stealing and everything that, like, nothing's done. I mean, I dropped out of the Democrat Party back in Clinton's second term. My father and mother and all my brothers, all the working people in my neighborhood, all Democrats. And I seen what was going on with him and the Chinese communists back then. Rush Limbaugh used to complain about the Chi-Coms and stuff going in the White House. I remember him on an interview, Bill Clinton, saying, "We can't equate trade with human rights, because when we build up their country, human rights will come up," or some nonsense. There's a million Uyghurs in camps right now. I mean, how do people, like, even go to functions and talk to these people's beyond me? Yeah. But Hillary Clinton was one of the big fans of Saul Alinsky, like Barack around the clock. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Hey, Charlie,
the whole
thanks.
Group of them, they're just all bad people. I don't know. It's sad.
Thank you, Charlie. Doctor, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, and Hillary Clinton, she did her thesis at Wellesley on Saul Alinsky, and Saul Alinsky offered her a full-time job. And here I am at the New York Times. All the news that's fit to print, let's see, Durham, D-U-R, oh, no hits, 0 out of 0. I just opened the Washington Post. It says here, the right underneath the masthead, "Democracy dies in darkness." Let's see, Durham, 1 hit. Okay, here we go. Fact checker analysis. Here's why Trump once again is claiming spying, put in quotes, by Democrats. And it's a fact check by Glenn Kessler. And I know how these fact checks report, right? How these things work. It'll say like, you know, 4 Pinocchios, right? False. You're like, false? What's false about it? And then they'll pick something like, "Greg Gutfeld of Fox News said that the Durham report said that Hillary Clinton's special counsel and also spied on Richard Nixon." False, right? So they'll find some way to make it false so that their base can disregard. And I'm using the word base, political base, for newspapers, right? Washington Post, New York Times, news sources, CNN, MSNBC. They're not supposed to be like political parties. They're supposed to be objective news media sources. But they're not. They are utterly – democracy dies in darkness, Washington Post. Democracy dies – you know, your definition of democracy, when you guys keep people in darkness by not reporting on facts, because some facts might you know, hurt your guy and help the other guy. That's not how you're supposed to do this. And they wonder why people aren't watching CNN and these other sources, right?
Because you
can't trust them.
I've got some liberal relatives, right? And they actually feel duped. I know it's the title of one of your books, but they've really pulled back. I mean, they were watching the MSNBCs and the CNNs, and they were getting one side of the media. And you know, they got their vaxes, they got their vaccinations, then they got their – and they've realized, you know, they're still getting sick. They're still getting COVID. And then they see this division. They see all that's going on. They just feel like They shut the TV off. They said, I'm not watching any of these news outlets anymore. Media has lost its credibility. It has lost, in some respect, its relevance. I mean, we need outlets that are out there that are going to be objective. If it goes against your guy, it goes against your guy. But just tell us the truth. If you do that, you'll have the highest rated television show on the air. I try to do that here. I try to not be partisan at all, but really to look at how the light of our faith shines upon those issues, whether it's gun control or immigration or whatever the issue may be. And sometimes it crosses both sides of the aisle. Doctor, stay with me. I think a short break when we come back. Mike in Chicago, Jim in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Everyone else will grab your calls. Last chance to get in. We're speaking with the great Dr. Paul Kengor, author of the book called Dupes. You might want to check that one out, as well as the book, one of his latest, The Devil and Karl Marx. You want to join us? 888-914-9149. Taking a look at the latest. Hillary Clinton tapping into Donald Trump's servers, or at least her campaign. I better be careful what I say. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, here's some food for thought. A couple days ago, I was speculating. We talked about it briefly. What would the 2024 presidential election look like? I would wager heavily Joe Biden is not going to be the front runner. Certainly, his VP is not going to take the lead. Biden's polls are, 34%? I mean, he's in the dumpster right now. I mean, you couldn't get a whole lot lower. And of course, Kamala Harris, not much better at all. So they're not going to be the front runners. But who runs? Is it Klobuchar? Is it Buttigieg? Is it Booker? Is it some of the other people that ran in the primary and kind of, jumped out of the way to let Joe have the front seat there? I don't know. There was a lot of speculation that perhaps Hillary Clinton, who won the popular vote, lost the Electoral College, would come back and run against Donald Trump. That was the thought. Learned her lessons from the previous campaign, know what they did wrong, would have a different tact, not only win the popular vote again, but win the presidency. Would that not have been something? Well, I think the likelihood of that has been shot in the foot. I think it's over. I think it's dead, especially after this scandal with Clinton campaign allegedly, tapping into Trump Tower and even into the White House, into Donald Trump's private emails, in order to try to make some sort of connection to Trump and Russia. That was the impetus before that. I'm joined today by Dr. Paul Kengor, and Doctor, I'd love your perspective on that as well. Maybe that's one of the reasons the media is not really covering this. The liberal media, not even discussing the possibility that there might be some merit or truth to this. Maybe they'd love to see Hillary Clinton run. What do you think that would be like? And do you think that this is the stake in the heart for Hillary Clinton, so to speak?
Well, so it looks like she's definitely running again, I think, Drew. And in fact, it was reported over the weekend, or I guess last week before the Durham news broke, that she's expected to speak at the New York State Democratic Convention, which is being held in Times Square at the Sheraton Hotel later this month. And, so that's prompting further speculation that she's running. And I mean, the fact that they're ignoring the Durham report, not only will they ignore it right now, they'll ignore it 4 years from now. So, I mean, anything like that would help Donald Trump and would hurt Hillary Clinton, they'll just ignore it. And, they'll squawk about it at Fox News. But they'll ignore it at CNN. I think if anything, it kind of shows that the whole if Trump supporters and Hillary supporters alike will apologize, will forgive me for this. Ben Sasse called the election of 2016 the great dumpster fire election of 2016. I think you're looking at another dumpster fire election too. in 2024. The brass knuckles are out again. So, you know, Donald Trump has even more reason to call Hillary Clinton crooked Hillary, right? And she has even more reason to swing back. And the fact that it's fascinating that Hillary looks like she's running again, because it tells you that she probably thinks that Joe Biden is not running again. And that if Biden doesn't run, that Kamala Harris probably isn't going to get the nomination.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of amazing. And could Trump beat Hillary again in 2024? Yeah. I mean, look, Hillary got in 2016, Hillary got 66 million votes. Donald Trump got 63 million. OK, but Trump in 2020 got 74 million votes. So could you know, he get more than, can Hillary, if Hillary gets 66 million again, I mean, you'd think Trump would get more than that. And so Trump is counting on that. So there's a good chance that 2024, amazingly, you could be looking at, you know, octogenarian Hillary and Trump, you know, two people that'd be in their 80s. In the first term in 2024, 2025, by that point.
Do you think Hillary could win, though? I you know, you're taking a look at somebody who won the popular vote and who learned, I would assume, learned from her mistakes in that previous election. Or do you think people are saying, gosh, we missed having Donald Trump here. Look at the economy. Look at our international affairs. Look at all this type of stuff. But as you had pointed out when he first ran, I mean, you weren't a big fan of Donald Trump at all, in particular because some of the things that he says. But how do you think that would shake out?
Well, I'll give you another statistic. So even though Trump increased his vote total from 2016 to 2020 from 63 million to 74 million, which is terrific, he got only 46.1% of the vote in 2016. In 2020, he got 46.9. So, you know, he's and here's something too for Trump supporters to think about. So Joe Biden had the worst 1 year approval numbers of almost any president in history. Who was the other that did worse? Donald Trump. So you know, Biden is unpopular, and even right now. So Biden polls are like, you know, 41-42%. So does Donald Trump. So you know, Biden is unpopular. Donald Trump is still unpopular. Hillary Clinton is still unpopular. But you know, personally, I'd like to just see somebody entirely new on both sides in 2024, right? And that's somebody, and I'm saying that as a Catholic who appreciates that Donald Trump was really good on pro-life issues and judges during his presidency. He was even good on religious freedom, all stuff that I didn't think he would be good at. But in 2024, I really like to see two-party nominees that aren't detested by over 50% of the American electorate. And you know, that's sadly the case for both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
So who would they be? DeSantis from Florida, Tim Scott? Who do you see?
Yeah, people like that. That's absolutely right.
Who are the Democratic side of the aisle?
Well, that's a good question. I knew that Joe Biden was not detested, and we talked about this a lot, right? You and I, 2019, 2020, we said, look, you know, this is going to be tough for Donald Trump, because in 2016, he ran against Hillary, who was actually more disliked than him. But people don't detest Joe Biden, right? But right now, Joe Biden is not liked at all. So Biden was the one person out of that big group of Democrats who wasn't loathed, right, by like over 50% of the electorate. But if Biden doesn't run in 2024, who among that group of Democrats in 2020 is liked by the American public? I'm not sure. I don't know who it is, frankly. Maybe that's why Hillary's jumping in again.
I'm sure that's why if she does, I don't know if there's any merit to this report that's coming out. I think her future is over. Let's grab a call too before we run out of time. Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Jim, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. I was calling just regarding the report that came out, the Durham report. But one of the things that I heard before that was the Mueller report, and that the report started out as a way of finding out if the Russians actually hacked into our political system on either party, and that in fact there was six or eight operatives that did that and were hacked into the DNC computer. So there is that part of the report that nobody keeps mentioning on the conservative side and wondering about what would be done about it if that happened again and Spurgeon was on the conservative side.
Hey, Jim,
and your
take
on those issues.
Thanks, Jim. Doctor, we only have probably about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, so I'll let you respond.
Yeah, well, okay. So, I'll quickly say this. What is interesting about the both the Mueller report, which, you know, looked into Trump collusion with the Russians, is that it exonerated him on that.
$30 million.
Yeah, and Donald Trump's claims of being spied on, the Durham report looks like it's probably going to say that. And for liberals and Democrats who went ballistic and they're canceling people to this day who questioned the 2020 election, they need to remember that for 4 years they were saying that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians to win the 2016 election, right? So they could complain all they want about rigged elections when it's Trump is supposedly doing it, but you can't even ask if, you know, the vote in Pennsylvania was questionable, right, in 2020. So these double standards are just awful. Yep. They really are. But the Mueller report cleared Trump on the issue of collusion with the Russians.
Well, Doctor, thank you. My apologies to Mike and Aaron and everybody else who's on hold. We're out of time. We'll be revisiting the issue, I'm sure. Thanks for being here. And of course, people can check you out online and check out your books. My gratitude to Dr. Paul Kenger. I'm out of time for the day. I will be back again tomorrow. If you're new to the program, I'm on from noon to 3 in the Pacific time zone, 3 to 6 on the Eastern, 2 to 5 in the Central every day. And anything you missed, you can catch up on at our podcast. Just go to relevantradio.com or where podcasts are listened to. All right? Have a great day. We'll talk again soon. God bless you.